What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Told the Netflix numbers, I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
Welcome, everyone, to Pollock and Thurston. An exciting edition of the show here on Wednesday, March the 12th. And for those of you that are joining us live on YouTube, you can see this wonderful set design by Brandon Thurston, which, if I do dare, I would give this an A+.
Would you give it a letter grade?
I would. Absolutely.
I'm not asking you not to do letter grades. I'm just telling you, I would prefer that you didn't.
But would that cause a rift between us if I continued against your wishes?
Look, I'm just telling you what I would prefer.
Okay. Because I have a lot, we have a lot invested in each other. Shouldn't mm-hmm. let something like a grade get in the way of that. So,
yeah. So, you know,
but it's my decision.
Of course it is. It totally, I would never want to pressure you, but I would really prefer if you didn't do that anymore.
Welcome, everyone, to the show. It's going to be an exciting one. We're going to be talking a lot about letter grades, which, Brandon, I'm sure you have had this sometimes in your life. I was explaining this story to my wife. And when I'm not talking to you or away, and I'm talking to someone that has, like, no following of this stuff, mm-hmm. it's then that it really dawns on me, like a light from above, like, the ridiculous industry that we cover.
Yeah, only in pro wrestling. We'll get into the details. This is not an issue there are other sports. The very same reporter is continuing to this day, including this past weekend, still doing letter grades.
Not an issue there.
Well, we're going to get into our main story tonight, and that comes from the report that we should give credit. This was first reported by Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer newsletter last Friday. And it was like a two paragraph story in the Observer. And what it included was the line that somebody brought up, how come ESPN stopped doing the reviews with letter grades after WWE pay-per-views, with the last one being WrestlePalooza? The first one after WWE made the deal with ESPN, which Andreas Hale gave a so-so grade to. And that show did end up being voted worst major show of the year. That was in the Observer Awards. Then those post-show evaluation columns like that disappeared. If you thought WWE didn't care about that, clearly you have to think again, given they disappeared. The story came up after the weekend show, and it was confirmed to be by somebody on the WWE side that WWE had gotten it killed. So Brandon and I decided to dig into this. So the reports themselves did not stop. There was, in fact, the WrestlePalooza show that, if we rewind to September, became a big deal because Andreas Hale gave WrestlePalooza, which was not a great show, a C. The dreaded C.
Yes. He also gave letter grades to each match for WrestlePalooza, and we'll get to as Crown Jewel as well.
That's right. They did not, the letter grades did not end with WrestlePalooza, but they did end after the Crown Jewel Australia show, which was a better received show. So they didn't do any report for the Survivor Series, but our understanding was that that had nothing to do with this. they skipped Survivor Series. There was no event in December. And then we fast forward, the Royal Rumble comes. And then I guess it was after the Elimination Chamber. Someone online notes that the letter grades are not there. And then you and I started asking around about this. And it was, you know, reiterated to us that, yes, there was definitely WWE was not happy with this, and that there was at least their issues that were raised toward this, and the letter grades were removed from these WWE reports after Crown Jewel Australia.
Yes. So as you mentioned, this was reported first by the Observer. As we discussed, we were really surprised that this did not get picked up, as things tend to get picked up when somebody like Wrestling Observer or let's say Fightful reports something. It's an aggregator smorgasbord out there.
This had WWE, this had ESPN attached. This is like journalistic interference. Like to me, that like I thought this was pretty significant, like when I read it. But you know, it was kind of just contained to the Observer and their shows coming out of last Friday.
So you sent this to me on the weekend, and we immediately reached out to people, confirmed it with multiple sources. Shall we read directly from the article where we also have an additional source telling us after we, you know, so we did ask ESPN for comment. We did ask Andreas Hale for comment. We did try to contact executive editor leadership, who oversee the kinds of articles that Andreas Hale does. No comments from any of them. But so we do have, however, one source with knowledge of ESPN's approach maintained that the decision to discontinue letter grades was ESPN's alone, and that WWE did not request the change. When we pressed that source to explain reasoning for the removal of the grades and whether WWE took issue with the reviews, the source declined to respond further.
Right. So, I mean, we were given that, and that's where we are sort of have to do our parsing here of now, is this a semantic argument in the sense that WWE cannot technically make that decision and tell Andreas Hale, stop doing this?
Can ESPN controls its own business, which is a tautology.
Of course. Now, we tried to press by, was there discomfort by WWE over this? And then, you know, if this was a ESPN philosophical decision, then why do these letter grades exist for these UFC reports? Which, by the way, this UFC event on Saturday was excoriated by Andreas Hale, who covered this show. It got a way worse review than WrestlePalooza got as well. And he was doing these letter grades when UFC was still under the ESPN deal as well. So there is a bit of a comparison here.
Including before, because Andreas Hale's been with ESPN, I think, for a couple of years now. So it's not like I don't think he was writing for ESPN like when the ESPN and UFC deal started, however many years ago.
No, he was at the Sporting News, and then he went to ESPN. I mean, he has been covering combat sports a long time.
Nonetheless, I dug into this to see that he did have letter grades reviewing UFC reviews, you know, well before the Paramount deal was announced, when it was, I think the prevailing wisdom was they would stay with ESPN. So point being, it's not like he only gave letter grades to UFC shows once they were a lame duck on ESPN. No, he was giving letter grades to UFC shows when UFC was broadcasting on ESPN. And the prevailing wisdom was that they would renew. And there was no expectation necessarily that they were going to go to somewhere else, which they did.
Yes. So we go through this timeline, and as well, I think it's very important to contrast, because Andreas Hale is like their combat sports reporter. It's not like he's just doing wrestling. Like, he does MMA. He does boxing as well. ESPN's decision contrasts with promises made by executives at the beginning of its new broadcast relationship. And we're going to play this clip that occurred September 17th, which was right before WrestlePalooza and the launch of WWE's PLEs on ESPN's platforms. And this was a question about ESPN having journalistic independence when it comes to covering a property that the network is licensing.
The increase of this partnership between WWE and ESPN, is there reassurance you can provide to us that reporters who report on WWE for ESPN will still have full independence in how they cover WWE or even WWE's competitors for that matter.
Yeah, I think the answer to that is an emphatic yes.
Unequivocal yes. I mean, that's separation of church and state. Ben, I know we have some PR folks on here that could probably underscore that, but yes.
So that was John Lasker and Matt Kenny. Matt Kenny, who has since moved to CBS Sports back in October. It says here in our article that Lasker and Kenny were not necessarily overseeing ESPN's journalistic work. However, Post Wrestling contacted ESPN's editorial leadership for comment, but they did not provide statements.
And just to say, so Matt Kenny, I take it as somebody who probably helps negotiate this deal with WWE, it seems like. And John Lasker is the ESPN Plus SVP, so he oversees their streaming business, it seems like. These are not necessarily people who are overseeing the reporters who report on ESPN.com. This was the point that we were trying to make there.
Yeah, and you tell me if you thought differently, but in reporting out this story, like to me, this really did outline...
But they were speaking nonetheless on behalf of ESPN.
They were speaking on behalf of ESPN, absolutely, and they should be held to that public statement. But I think we also see like there are different tiers at ESPN, and I think that when you're looking at the editorial side with the television and streaming side, like these are all these different components, I think, that we are seeing here, and that there are separations of these, but there are also times that these are going to be entangled, and sometimes one is going to be in conflict with the other. And like journalism is an aspect to ESPN that is sort of under the microscope in this case, for sure.
Yeah.
So as well as we continue to look at this, Andreas Hale authored a piece with original comments from Seth Rollins. This ran September 18th, 2 days before WrestlePalooza, which was the event where Hale gave this mixed review. Since then, ESPN's digital reporters, who previously had frequent access to WWE talent, which we have a link towards, haven't had a new story with original comments from WWE talent. An ESPN spokesperson did not respond to a question about whether ESPN reporters on the editorial side have recently had difficulty getting access to WWE talent. The source, with knowledge of ESPN's approach, contended there have been no issues with access, pointing to WWE talent appearing on ESPN's televised broadcasts, which, to my point, shows you like this separation as well between television and the digital here. However, the source did not provide, and we could not find, any examples of recent access granted to ESPN's digital editorial staff for original reporting or interviews since September. Hale's two-letter grade reviews were in line with the consensus of fan opinion for the same events as well.
Right. It's not so that he gave a C to WrestlePalooza, he gave a B to Crown Jewel, and then you can tell I wrote this part of the article. I dumped some data here from not just Cage Match. Okay, I know Cage Match is a lightning rod, but there's this app that called Dropkick that has actually a lot more raters on it than Cage Match does. It's got well over 1,000 for each of these shows, and it grades on a 5-point scale. Graded WrestlePalooza 2.4 out of 5, Crown Jewel a 4 out of 5. The Cage Match ratings were in the range of that as well. So it's not like this was a show that was well reviewed by the masses, not the people online anyway. It was, you know, he gave it a C, and it got ratings that were reflective of a C from thousands of people here from these crowdsourced sources. So, and it's not like he gave the show an F. He gave it a C. And we've got, you know, data to show here, crowdsourced from hundreds of people, from a couple thousand people, to show that this was within the consensus of
Andreas Hale was definitely not on an island when it came to his review of this show. Some would argue a C was being generous to this show. Yeah. And let's also remember that this context, that this is also the same day that WrestlePalooza is going head to head with All Out, which was taking place in Toronto that day. So you had the natural comparisons that weekend of the two shows.
And this did get a lot of attention. I think, you know, if it's the case that WWE, as we're reporting, here it is, If WWE went and you know, expressed discomfort about it, one would think, you know, it had something to do with all the attention that that WrestlePalooza review especially got, even though he did do one more in the form of Crown Jewel. I mean, that for whatever reason, we could, you know, spend a half hour psychoanalyzing why that got such a big reaction, his C grade of WrestlePalooza upon the first show of this ESPN deal.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because that annoyed me at the time that it got so much attention that, look, ESPN gave this show a C. It was like, and I understand I'm sort of like paintbrushing everyone here, but those that made such a big deal out of this, it was like ESPN should be like skewed towards WWE. Like they should be giving, like they should just be in the bag for WWE. Like instead of this being an example of ESPN's editorial team having the ability to just give their unvarnished view of a show, it was like this shock from people. Like all these sites are like covering this as though this is some scandal that a site is not giving some skewed review of a show because of a existing relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't delve deeply into the conversation other than to know that this was something that got a lot of attention. And I think I'm sure it was something that performed well on Squared Circle on the subreddits. And I think that's kind of the guiding light of like what's getting engagement, what's getting attention. And that's what I'm going to aggregate. If I'm a wrestling news with a Z aggregator, I'm going to go for the stuff that's getting a lot of attention. And I'm sure there's a lot of tribalism involved in this in terms of what you're saying, that with W fans who just felt like, you know, if you're reviewing a W show with W's new partner, you should be positive and beyond the team, I guess. But that's not what independent journalism is.
And so, like, quietly, these grades go away, and then it's only brought to everyone's attention last week. But I think that this does at least give you, to me, a sense of, you know, at best, WWE not happy with this and leaving ESPN with a decision to make. And I would, the open question I would have is how much is just dictated to the editorial staff of that comes from the higher executive side, and how high this would potentially go. Like, what is WWE's outreach to ESPN? And
what you're getting at, what we couldn't find the answer out to, is at what level was this decision made?
Exactly.
When was it made? What was there a conversation among executives from the two companies here that this flowed from? What was the nature of that? Who was involved? And when did it happen? We don't know the answers to those questions.
Yes. And what the status is of, you know, ESPN's digital team, because I think once you like that kind of just like what, when we were given that comment about like, it has not affected access whatsoever. I mean, just all we need to do is go through ESPN's WWE section. Like there is nothing that they are getting. Like there has been no interviews. There has been nothing. And yes, the television, is that just a smokescreen for this? Like for WWE, I'm sure they very much value having television content and they're sending their performers there, but there's nothing populating their digital side. It's comprised of show reviews, lists, historical pieces, or archived pieces from years back.
Obviously, in terms of the television, there's clearly incentive to promote WWE and to promote W events like there has not been before September 2025. But I went back and I think you can find the hyperlinks in the article that we published of, I mean, this is an outlet that had access to Dwayne Johnson in 2024, to Cody. I mean, some of the biggest names you can imagine, to Paul Levesque.
So and this was before the deal.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. Before they had a W that they would be incentivized to highlight.
And you have all these talents that are just coming through Bristol or routinely that easily, like that's, like ESPN has like dubbed it like the car wash, that, you know, you would bring somebody in and they just go to all the different places and you do your 15 minutes with this person and this show and that podcast. And I think, like, to me, like, that kind of just spells it out right there. And not to inject ourselves here, but I think, you know, like the idea that WWE will just, you know, refrain from engagement, I think that that is certainly within their method. But when it comes to media they want to work with and media they don't want to work with, and they have that prerogative of who they want to offer talent to.
It's a free country, and they're a private, both publicly traded but privately held company. Is there, and we reach out to W for comment all the time, and we haven't had any contact with them now in well over a year in terms of them responding to us, not from us, reaching out. Is there, we mentioned here towards the end, just for a context note, the removal of the press conferences upon, SummerSlam was the first event that did not have these press conferences that were there for a couple of years or a few years. Is that part of a broader theme for WWE?
I mean, more limited access for media.
A leading question.
Yes. Well, I can't say AEW made a strong argument for bringing back press conferences on Wednesday.
I heard there was a press conference last night.
If you can call it that, yes. It was the attempt. It was quite the attempt for a go-home segment for a pay-per-view. But, yes. I mean, what were any of your just general overview of this story? And quite frankly, I think what is your thought on just the fan base at large about how much it is concerned with a story like this when it comes to WWE's, influence that it can exude over media partners? Like, do you think that's something that the general fan cares a lot about, or just media as a whole, that you're looking at this? Like, is this a bigger story just in that, like, we're talking about WWE here. ESPN is working with a lot bigger entities than WWE. And this was after show number one, there was an issue, and it turns into something. Like, it just does make you look at, like, ESPN is both, like, what is the purpose of having, like, an editorial side of having reporters when you're facilitating a lot of these promotions and leagues that you're in business with and have far more interest in when it comes to what you're investing in?
Yeah. I think there's two things there, right? There's to what degree does this matter? Because it's online. How much does this matter to WWE's actual business and actual audience? And secondly, like, I think there's a real question that people in our circles are probably not going to have as much, because they're probably more focused on the wrestling part of this story. There's a real thought to have about ESPN here as well. So does this matter? That's always the question: to what extent does stuff that happens online and mainly only online really matter? Because this is not something that if you turn on the ESPN channel or any other really traditional outlet, you're going to see any, sight of. But I think, what happens online is ever more important, because people are ever more online and everybody's got a smartphone in their pocket now. And whether or not, it's probably people who are deeply engaged with WWE and with wrestling who are most aware of this, certainly. But I think those people should not be by default dismissed, because those are your bellwether fans who have, who are deferred to by the more casual fans. Those people who have friends they defer to their hardcore wrestling fan friend to tell them what's WWE like these days. Does WWE have a good reputation as a company that puts on shows? Do they have a good reputation as a company? And things like this certainly reflect on that. Whatever their goals were with expressing discomfort with these grades and preferring to see these grades go away has probably backfired on them at this point. Probably by the time a story, stories like this get published, I think this is a net negative for them. And secondly, this is, we try to write at the beginning of this, these are just grades about, this is somebody's subjective grading of a wrestling show, of an entertainment show. It's a pseudo sport. He graded this one a C, this one a B, who cares? But this is quite meaningful when there's this partnership here, which is something of a conflict of interest, right? This happens across media and broadcasting. I mean, every broadcaster of sports, I think almost every one of them in the United States also is a news outlet, whether it's NBC, ABC, Fox, et cetera. They're all also doing news, and that might mean doing sports news too. and Dave does mention it in his report that he had first about, you know, ESPN is not only a broadcaster of the widest variety of sports, but it's also about to become a part owner, a minority owner in the NFL. And this example that WWE was able to exude some influence here to get some changes upon their editorial process should raise additional questions about how independent ESPN's reporting process is.
Yeah. Like, it just goes to show that you farm this out of, you know, what would be like a more significant event that would occur with a larger partner like the NFL. Like, this to me, like, this is pretty innocuous when you think about the reaction versus what was we're talking about letter grades, and that this was raised immediately. Like, we're not talking like we're several years into this deal where, you know, they're just like right away we're sticking our, we're drawing a line in the sand that this irks us this level. I just find it to be, I think it's very tricky to be able to try and engage in reporting when you are in business with these companies. And even when on its face, it's ESPN paying WWE, it's not vice versa. And you would think that, like, so often it is these broadcasters that are the ones that are kind of under the gun of, are they going to be lenient towards these leagues, that they are the ones spending these huge amounts of money to license.
What brings to mind is, was it this past NFL season where on the Manning cast on ESPN2, where they're watching along the Monday Night Football game, they had some guest on who I've just been Googling, I can't remember who it was, who like started talking about the Guardian caps or something like that, and was like, why aren't they all like this person was, I think it was a former player, basically saying that's not going to do anything, that Guardian cap's not going to do anything, they're all going to, you know, basically alluding to the fact that they're going to get head injuries regardless. And it was this very uncomfortable moment for Peyton Manning where it's like, you know, somebody, it felt like pro wrestling in that, where like somebody who's from the outside, who doesn't know what the taboos are, to not say, says the taboo thing, and everybody's got to try to get him off the subject.
Yeah, sorry. Here's the handbook in advance of when you come on the Manning cast of what you do and do not speak of. I think that if nothing else, I think there will be a more heightened focus on whether these letter grades quietly come back, what if interviews start popping up. I think there will be, at least in the short term, a bit more attention towards like the ESPN, you know, editorial staff, and are they on this island when it comes to WWE? And at the very least, I don't think it's going to be like this case over the last few months where this kind of just flew under the radar and now there is a bit more attention on this, because when ESPN is attached to something like this, it is going to get the attention of like your awful announcings and stuff, because this is, it's a media story and it's two very recognizable companies here in WWE and ESPN.
Ed Reed, and it was not 2025, it was 2024. Right. I mean, it's the point I think that we're making is if WWE can get a change like this, which is somewhat innocuous, relatively speaking, imagine what the NFL could do, you know, that, which is a far, far bigger business than WWE is, for all its amazing profitability.
You can read our story at postwrestling.com that went up on Tuesday. We're going to move on to AEW, a couple of topics to go through today. They had their Revolution media call. There were several questions posed from John Elba and Dave Meltzer about Paramount's pending acquisition of Warner Brothers Discovery. And we're going to hear one clip here where Tony was asked about Paramount, and there could be good, there could be bad, but Paramount, they're also linked to the UFC.
There are tons of sports that exist on these platforms. I would love to be on the same channel as UFC. I have a great relationship with Dana White and Hunter Campbell. While their sister promotion is also in pro wrestling and it is of a competitive nature there, I think that on my behalf, I would love to be on the same channel as UFC. So I see a lot of positive utility to that. And if it was up to me, and certainly these are all things that have to be worked out in the future with the new leadership, but I would love that. So however it works out, I'm sure they're going to make great decisions because we have great new leadership coming in, and I'm very grateful to the current leadership and the people that have built up Warner Brothers Discovery and helped AEW grow.
That was Tony Khan talking about Paramount, and I think he would have given a high grade to UFC 236 this past Saturday based on that answer, as he would David Ellison, who he said he thinks the world of, he admires very much, and explained he has a great relationship with Paramount because of the existing NFL ties with Paramount. So
yeah, I suppose it's not nothing, yeah.
So, I mean, he's certainly painting an optimistic view of Paramount purchasing Warner Brothers Discovery. You know, his argument is that this opens up, like, there's a vast sports portfolio that Paramount is going to have where AEW fits in there. Like, if AEW is seen as, like, valuable, like, there's certainly a lot of different platforms, many different options for AEW. But again, like, that is also, they're going to have so many sports properties. Do they become expendable? Like, all these things are possible. And we're just looking at all these different scenarios right now that we're going to be talking about for the next, well, until the end of this contract.
Yeah. I guess, do NFL owners already have a relationship with the Ellisons through CBS? How long have the Ellisons controlled CBS for? It's only been a little while, right? Regardless, I think what he's doing there is saying, you know, he's sort of speaking into existence at the least, that, you know, I want to have a great relationship with these people so that they will continue to keep AEW around at a race. Yeah.
He did really emphasize the fact that this is the first time AEW is going to be on the same platform as the NFL because of CBS, and that they're technically all under the same umbrella now. Feels that AEW, it fits under the sports division, cited the ties to the league, and called this very exciting. In regards to my AEW, which we'll talk about in a minute here, he was very careful here to state that this is an international play, that here domestically, they are very tied with their WBD partnership. The bulk of their revenue comes from TV and pay-per-view. They have a great relationship with WBD, and that my AEW is designed to be for fans abroad, and it has nothing to do with their relationship with WBD. And this was with John Elba asking if my AEW, could it become another U.S. distributor of pay-per-views like a Triller, like a PPV.com, and be for U.S. fans to also be able to buy through my AEW. And it feels as though they, you know, Tony Khan is not stating this outright, but it seems they want to funnel, I think, as much of their pay-per-view business through HBO Max in the U.S. And again, my AEW, it's very different depending on where you live in the world of how much of a feature this is going to be. Because if you're in the UK, like, you have a tremendous bargain now with what is offered to you, which is pretty much the full slate of things. And thankfully, we have not just a story from Jack Wannan, but a table from Brandon Thurston, where you can figure out where you are when it comes to my AEW, which we should explain is the service that AEW has introduced this past week. And it's a fast channel, but it's also a streaming service internationally that you can get, depending on your region, the monthly pay-per-views, Honor Club, live access to Dynamite and Collision. And it feels like this is a kind of international safety net if you know, things like AEW Plus disappear. And this would be like this is a hell of a deal for people when you're talking about the pay-per-views that come for a fraction of the price if you sign up for an annual subscription.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we don't know what the splits are here. There's also a company involved with, I mean, I assume providing the technology for this streaming service, basically, right? Which is called, let's see if I can pronounce this, Kisswee, which is, according to the press release, is an award-winning technology company that enables the biggest brands in sports and entertainment to reliably reach their fans anywhere on any screen. So, I mean, obviously, AEW cannot in-house make a streaming service, but so they have a partner here, so who is, I'm sure, getting compensated. So, I mean, what I'm getting to is, like, is it a more financially beneficial deal for a given customer to sign up through MyAEW than Triller TV with AEW Plus? I would think this. Otherwise, why would you do it? I guess other than, well, of course, Triller's financial. So Triller did finally report some of its required financial statements, which were causing issues for itself. Regardless, tell me if I'm right here. I mean, let's forget the U.S. and Canada for a moment.
Yeah,
for everybody outside of those regions. And let's forget Mexico as well. They don't get any of this. Sorry, Mexican fans. But for, let's say, the UK, you're getting not only what is offered through AEW Plus, which is live broadcast access to Dynamite and Collision, but you're also basically getting Honor Club.
Yes.
You say that without the library, I guess. Without the Ring of Honor library.
Is it Honor Club or is it just the pay-per-view? The ROH, it's a ROH TV. So yeah, like TV, you would be getting,
you're getting the ROH pay-per-views. You're getting Dynamite and Collision. If you sign up for the monthly plus PPV subscription, which is £15, 15 Great British pounds or 17 euros if you're in the EU, then you get access to all the pay-per-views automatically too for at least 90 days. So this is kind of like if you're, I don't know how many people there are on Honor Club, but I mean, it's if you're on Honor Club and AEW Plus, I mean, you would obviously just cancel both of those and sign up for this, I guess.
Yeah. He was asked, Tony Khan was asked and said that they are, they have a great audience and revenue coming in for Honor Club. So there's revenue coming in. We can at least confirm.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like internationally, like it's a great deal here. It does make you certainly look at like how many like US or Canadian customers are going to be searching the worlds of like VPNs where you can save a ton. Like this reminds me a lot of like the UFC deal in the US where on Paramount Plus, you can get all the pay-per-views for your streaming fee. And like here in Canada, you still have to pay $80 for a pay-per-view.
Right. I'm looking at what these rates are. 21 euros is a euro is worth a little more than a US dollar, I think. Oh, yes. The European fans are coming after me now. That's a pretty good deal then. If I'm in Canada, I've got to pay $55 almost for a pay-per-view. That's the only option you're getting in Canada out of my AEWs. You can buy the pay-per-view. That's it. This is a pay-per-view outlet for you. Of course, for me in the United States, they would prefer that I buy through HBO Max and be an HBO Max subscriber, so I get a small discount. But for those in the US, I do get the fast channel access, but you don't in Canada get access to the fast.
Why do you think that is? That's got to be some restriction with the TSN contract. That's the only reason I can guess as to why we don't get the fast channel. Have you tried this out at all? Have you looked at the fast channel or no?
I got in a VPN and I went to all these countries.
That's right. You went on your world tour for the table.
Yes.
I mean, this is really not aimed at the US or Canadian. Like, no. I mean, Canada, you basically have nothing here. Like, this is nothing in Canada other than another option to buy it. But I mean, you can buy it on Triller here. You can buy it on traditional pay-per-view. You can buy it on any of the available outlets. This is just one more option, but I can't see any Canadians like being driven towards this when it doesn't come with any of the incentives, even the fast channel.
And Mexico is completely blacked out here. I would have to look at what the distribution is in Mexico and Latin America. I know there was Fox Sports at one point. Is that still happening? I would have to look. But this is in India. So this must be somewhat, complicated by the deals that do exist. So in India, you do get access to the fast channel, but just like the US, that's it.
So Fox Sports Mexico, signed up with AEW. This was in October 2024 for a multi-year deal, which I imagine is still ongoing this early in it. Yeah, this started a year and a half ago. Fox Sports Mexico acquires the multi-region broadcast rights to AEW, one of the hottest pro wrestling brands. So, I mean, that could be very
AEW similar. Did get a deal on Fox. See,
they got it. All these people is so there you have it. Is this all right. Well, there you go. We're trying to figure out all these AEW international deals on the fly. But yeah, we did get some feedback from people on Wednesday that tried it out, and it seemed to be, you know, it worked for Dynamite on Wednesday night, and you know, it's another option for them. And I would imagine that it was interesting. Like, they didn't promote this at all on Wednesday's show, and part of it you understand because they don't have Brandon's table, and it becomes very difficult, especially on your US broadcast, like how you even promote this. Like, it's, you really don't want to be promoting things that are so geographic specific. So it's sort of,
and you roll out a streaming service to the US audience, and
that's, yeah, like you're telling the majority of your fans watching this and aren't going
to
be able,
it's just a fast channel. It's
so it is kind of hard to promote it. So I do kind of understand that, removal from their broadcast.
The day that this was announced, which was what, like 2 days ago, I have an Apple TV. I was able to download to my AEW Apple TV app. I could not play any content other than the podcasts. I could watch the AEW Unrestricted podcast, which apparently have a video version.
Okay.
As of a couple of days ago, I was not able to watch the Fast Channel despite being in the US or make anything else. There wasn't even like content for me to browse through, but I guess there wouldn't be because I'm in the US, but I couldn't do the Fast Channel.
Speaking of Revolution, the last number from WrestleTix, they have a 10,897 tickets distributed. Last year's show at the same arena, the Crypto.com arena in Los Angeles, finished at 11,670. So I would think by Sunday they will pass last year's figure. They certainly are closing in on that. They have about less than 800 tickets to move to surpass last year's number. So that would be a good sign. Double or Nothing as well. That's the show May 24th at Louis Armstrong Stadium. They've already moved over 8,200 tickets. This place can hold around 14,000. So certainly that has gotten off to, I would say, a good start. It isn't the automatic first day sellout, but I would say that they should be happy with that, like in the just putting tickets on sale for that, which I think these just went on sale last week.
Mm-hmm. Just to look at these, you know, 7,960. We also have a WrestleMania number here. We do have at least I don't know if there's a Sunday that I'm seeing, but we are seeing WrestleMania for Saturday now, a month and 5 days away, 37,520.
Yes. Day two is at 38,470. Both of them, the exact same week from last year, they're about 15% behind where they were this week last year as well. So that's the comparison point. So, I mean, there's been very, very little movement, even with the, you know, the main events are now pretty much solid for these nights. You're starting to see a semblance of like the top matches for the show. I feel like we will get a lot of movement, but I think it's going to be late this year that you're going to see, you know, towards like the lead up to WrestleMania, if prices come down, if there's, you know, impulse buys the week of, that they will get these numbers up, or if they just start you know, giving out tickets to just fill the place as well, if this just kind of hits its number and it's not moving all that much. I feel they'll just the lower prices and see some kind of movement there at a certain point, but we shall see.
Free tickets, comp tickets, especially for celebrities. I think that, to me, that
I think Lil Yachty will be covered. I think he'll be okay. Bert Kreischer, you know, all the WWE's faves. Stand and Deliver is not taking place over WrestleMania weekend. Instead, it's getting its own weekend, April 4th, and it's getting its own streaming platform. It's not going to be on ESPN. It's not going to be on Peacock. YouTube lands Stand and Deliver, as announced by Shawn Michaels. I think we were the first ones to note this, Brandon, about the press release that curiously omitted Peacock. And here we go. It's looks like this one is going to fall between the cracks, and we don't have a new deal for NXT's PLEs. And this will air on YouTube on Saturday night, April the 4th. And my guess towards this, Brandon, is that they have a certain amount that they're looking for these NXT PLEs, and they don't have anyone biting at that amount. And I'm sure they wanted something shored up in time for this show. This is, by their definition, their biggest show of the year, and it's airing on YouTube, which I would be curious, like, what would you have any guess what the value of running this show on YouTube would be? It's minuscule.
What I was going to say is, with WWE being one of the biggest creators on YouTube, I think they're often globally in the top 10 or something like that.
Yes.
If they have, I would be really curious to know what the nature of their arrangement. If they, I assume
think they
on,
would have,
they're
extremely
they're not on favorable. Our arrangement, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine they have something a little sweeter than that. I'm sure there's no rights fee happening here, but maybe they're monetizing at a higher rate than the rest of us because they're at the head of the pack. What did people say, or what did Tony Khan say, or what was reported that Tony Khan's feeling was about a potential Ring of Honor deal? He has a very clear idea of what a Ring of Honor deal is worth, and that has not been offered yet, or something like that. What we talked about as alternatives to YouTube is CW. I didn't look into it deeply, but I don't know that CW is going to deliver, a demo rating that's on par with what this would. So, mildly surprised that CW doesn't pick it up. ESPN clearly only wants the big PLEs, the main roster stuff. So that's what they're getting. I mean, we're just like the library. I think we're in a period where, and these NXT PLEs were always, a side dish to other stuff, but we're in a period where the library doesn't have. Where the rewatch era was within wrestling was in the late 2010s, and that period has passed, and there's just too much content to keep up with. This is what AAA does as well.
Yeah. I mean, and depending on your region, this will either be YouTube or Netflix that you'll watch this show.
So it'll be Netflix for the rest of the world.
Yeah. Like for Canada, it's like everything from NXT is on Netflix for us. So it depends on what region you're in, but YouTube is your backup.
Put it on Netflix. Does Netflix want the domestic rights?
Yeah. I'm guessing that it's not top of mind for Netflix at this, but I would imagine
what's Ted doing? He's not that busy anymore, right?
He just got a $2.8 billion breakup fee.
He's got a ton of extra money laying around. Come on. Yeah,
I'm sure. Maybe Nick wants to take him the signal and they can have a chat about the breakup fee.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Saturday night's main event, that will be airing on Peacock on May 23rd. Where is it going to be taking place, Brandon?
Well, let's talk about this story.
Yeah, this is your story here, and I was upset on your behalf, but I'm going to let you share whatever you want to share.
I'm trying to find your article about it. So what's the story here?
You and I were told the dates for several upcoming shows, this being one of them, and you got the location.
You gave me some dates of shows that you had heard. I went and confirmed that with additional sourcing, and that came with a location detail, I guess, that you did not have in the first place.
Yes.
So now we don't mess around. We don't just go spitting out every information that we hear. We try to double source things and really pin them down and make sure that they're true before we put them into the public. So I said, I've been making a lot of records requests lately to get venue agreements. And I know that you know, this Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is where I am hearing that Saturday Night's main event will be on May 23rd. Ah, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I know where they're running. They're running at the Allen County Memorial Coliseum, a publicly owned and operated venue. So I went to my friends at Allen County in Indiana, and I said, hello, pursuant to your public records law, I would like to, and I tried to make this as narrow as possible. Because I know I make big bad records requests sometimes. People say this is overbroad. So I said, I've got the actual text here. I'll read some of it. Right. I said, I am seeking to confirm whether World Wrestling Entertainment LLC, parentheses WWE, is planning an event at Allen County War Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on or about, we're not going to get lost in ambiguity here, May 23rd, 2026. To expedite processing, I'm requesting the minimum number of records necessary or those least burdensome to produce. I'm trying to, no excuses here, to confirm one narrow fact, whether WWE has a scheduled event at Allen County War Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on or about May 23rd, 2026. And WWE should be understood to include WWE Event Services LLC, which is their little LLC that they use for events, and TKO Group Holdings. So this is March 4th. The next day, we get a message from the Public Information Office saying that what you submitted is not a records request. However, we will answer your question. The Allen County War Memorial Coliseum does not have a World Wrestling Entertainment WWE event scheduled on or about May 23rd, 2026. This request is now closed. And I said, all right, I guess. And we said, well, okay, maybe it's not in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Have to take them at their word here. I mean, they wouldn't shy away from telling us that they were so emphatic here in this response, like underlining stuff. Okay. The amount of work it would take to just underline that word is as much as it would be to confirmed. So today, press release, WWE in partnership with Visit Fort Wayne announced that Saturday night's main event will emanate live from .. the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Saturday, May the 23rd. Now, we have several options here, Brandon. Number one is that last Thursday, after you sent your request, maybe Friday morning, WWE woke up and said, you know what? We haven't hosted Saturday night's main event in Fort Wayne, Indiana in more than 30 years. How fast could we book the Allen County War Memorial? Do you think they could have done this in 6 days?
I highly doubt it.
Well, I encouraged you to respond, and respond you did to this official who just the gall of like how emphatic they were. You and I are veterans of being completely ignored. Like it is our hidden talent, this ability to have thick skin when it comes to people ignoring us outright. But when you lie to us, dude, I will hold a grudge like I'm Danny Hodge, okay?
So, I don't know. Are there any highlights here? I don't know. Your office stated on March 5th, 2026, that my submission, quote-unquote, is not a records request. I respectfully disagree. My request, submitted on March 4th, asked for the minimum number of records, yada, yada. Okay. Under Indiana law, the appropriate response would have been to search for responsive records and either produce them or certify that none exist. Not to reframe the request and answer it as a courtesy. It is not apparent that any search was conducted. I go on to say, W publicly announced that the W event will take place at Allentown at Allen County War Memorial Coliseum exactly on that date, May 23rd, 2026, with the announcement made in partnership with the Visitors Bureau. Given the lead time typically required to finalize arrangements of this nature, I have concerns about whether my original request was responded to in good faith and whether responsive records existed at the time and were not disclosed. What else here? An event under contract or agreement at a public venue is, and I'm wondering if there were me playing semantic games about the word scheduled, But so this is what I wrote. An event scheduled, you know, an event under contract or agreement at a public venue is scheduled regardless of whether it has been publicly announced. Indiana's Access to Public Records Act does not permit a records custodian to avoid disclosure by interpreting a request's terms in a way that defeats the act's purpose. It goes on from there, but I don't want to get people too excited this evening.
Yeah, let's just say that the Pollock and Thurston Hall of Fame, the Allen County Public Records Office, it's getting its name retired right next to the good people at Philippe. Okay,
I don't want to be completely one side here. They did a couple months ago respond with some records that I did request for them. So I do appreciate that.
Well, let us see what they respond to here, because on the surface, it feels like they flat out lied to you. That is what I'm trying to say here. Okay. And if you can't trust these public institutions whose their role is transparency, I mean, what do we have faith in this world? I can't get letter grades. I can't get records requests. What are we doing here, Brandon? What's happening? There's too much power out there. We have to alleviate some of it. Okay, it's just too one-sided at this point.
This is just one of my many adventures in public records law that I've had lately. I don't know that we ever discussed my Omaha issues, which I did prevail in, by the way.
Listen, okay, Ken Paxton knows what's up. Okay, Judge Travis Lasker, he knows what's up. Okay, Brandon Thurston comes to your inbox, folks. Don't start underlining emphatic no's to obvious yeses. Okay, that would be my advice when Brandon Thurston comes around. All right, let's get to unless you want to weigh in on any of these MMA stories. I think we'll just get to the TV viewership, because there's actually quite a bit to get to. But in part, MVP has signed a deal with ESPN for its women's group, the MVPW, starting in April, between digital and on ESPN's flagship shows as well, which, in a tie-in, I will promise you, Andreas Hill will be covering these and probably signing letter grades to these shows as well. The UFC has announced their card for the White House. Everyone is furious, and that begins the countdown to June 14th.
So wait a minute. I heard this UFC show was celebrating the birthday of our country, my country, not yours.
A couple weeks early on somebody else's birthday.
The birthday of my country, I think, if unless they've been lying to me when I was in school, is July 4th.
But did you hear this from Allen County, or did you learn that in history? I mean,
I learned this through the public education system here in New York State. So not July 4th, but June 14th. That's not the birthday of our country.
It turns out that Donald Trump's birthday is now America's birthday. They're celebrating 3 weeks early.
Okay. He is the country, I guess. Okay.
In many ways, yes. Freedom 250.
I heard that Ronda Rousey went off on UFC fighter pay. I heard that. Is it true that Ric Flair was even used the U word in public?
Ric Flair used the U word. And I don't know what this is.
Union. He said it that.
Oh. Oh, dear.
So, I mean,
that's like talking about concussions on the Manning cast. You don't do right. that in wrestling.
I've been thinking, you know, about how, yes, of course, you know, WWE is part of TKO, a publicly traded company. WWE's been a publicly traded company since 1999, and they certainly had all the incentive in the world to serve their shareholders' interests for the last 27 years. What's different now that is making WWE and TKO more broadly so, some would say greedy, I would never say that, so ambitious about profitability?
I think that it comes down to they are, I mean, it looks at like what is like the long-term play for TKO? Like, what is their strategy when it comes to WWE and UFC?
I think that is the question. I think it may be no coincidence that, so who really owns WWE/TKO these days? It's Endeavor, but who really owns Endeavor?
Silver Lake.
And what's Silver Lake?
What is Silver Lake? I can't tell you what Silver Lake is.
It's a private equity firm. And I wonder if, you know, I think they're going to hold, I think Endeavor or Silver Lake, I think Endeavor is going to hold WWE and TKO for a number of years to come. But I wonder if they really are going to hold on to this company for the really long-term future. And part, and I think this would be consistent with the strategy of you're sort of flipping the house to get it, to make it looking really excellent, really great. And when we sell it to somebody, it'll go for as much money as possible, as opposed to, you know, a long-term, indefinitely long-term strategy, which Vince, for his flaws, had more in mind, because Vince had no intention of ever leaving this company.
I think this, and a lot of this is just, this is my speculation, is that some of it's informed with like what Nick Khan has stated publicly, but what do all of these giants, whether you're Amazon or Netflix or Apple or Disney, like what do you covet? And it is valuable IP that you can just make coin off year after year after year. And if you are Netflix and you have just swung and missed going for WBD, and you're looking at like, where, what is Netflix's next big play over the next decade? Like, do they open theme parks? What Netflix lacks are IP. And I think Nick Khan saw this as, this is fertile ground. WWE is so undervalued. It has got all control of these characters. And how can we just build this up and then unload it to one of these? Now, is WWE at that level that a Netflix would value the WWE as this big programming / IP giant that it could build at least a portion of this next vision around? Mm-hmm. I'm sure Nick Khan would love to get WWE to that level.
I mean, look, Disney is not just Disney characters now, of course, right? Everybody would know better than I do. It's Marvel, it's Star Wars. They acquired those.
I think they very much, like, I think that is, if you want to distill what is Nick Khan's long-term goal, it is making WWE closer to Marvel than it is anything else.
I think you mean a really valuable set of IP that can be sold at a great value to a much larger acquirer.
That you have, exactly, like a Undertaker that can be, it can be comics, it can be rides, it can be all these other things that we own outright. Like, these are not actors that we have to negotiate with. Like, these are self-created characters that we own their history, we own their likeness. I have no doubt that they will be at some point getting into, like, whether it is like just the like AI rights for all of these like performers as well. Like, watch out for those in like the next contracts when like AI generation suddenly becomes something you're signing over as a WWE talent, where they can take your image and your voice, which is something Disney has not handed. Like, you can use these characters now for AI purposes, but you can't use the voice of these animated characters. WWE, it's like there is this whole world that when you have no representation and you have talent that will sign over their rights and such.
They have, like, representation, but they have no collective bargaining.
There's like, ultimately, I feel like the next wave of WWE contracts, as it starts to address AI and all of these different aspects, I think that'll be very interesting to see how those rights are negotiated or just ultimately signed over. But
and when we talk about acquisition, I think people's heads start spinning, but like, I, all I'm talking about is like, it may become acquired by a much larger company, like maybe a Netflix or something like that, or probably not Disney, but Netflix makes some sense while we're sitting here talking about it. And it's not that W goes away, or even the people in charge of W at the time, whether it be Nick Khan or someone else, goes away or goes somewhere else, but that it becomes something that, whoever is responsible for that transaction, just like the people who were responsible for the TKO transaction, they got pretty nice bonuses.
Yeah. That's when your Nick Khans and Mark Shapiros are looking for like the Zaslav send-off check.
Yeah.
And they ride off into the sunset. Let's talk about some of these numbers from the past couple of nights. So going in order here, SmackDown last Friday night, 1,190,000 viewers and a 0.27 in the demo. This was down 14% in viewership and down over 20% in the demo. And this was for Drew McIntyre, Cody Rhodes, that was promoted all week. It was a big title change. I think a lot of people expected the title change. But yeah, this was their lowest 18 to 49 number since before the Dash study was introduced by Nielsen. And we got the bump at the end of January. So I can't.
Pretty surprising, isn't it?
I was very surprised. Like, it's not as though, like, you look at, there was, like, the World Baseball Classic was on, but that was not anything to the, like, that was not the competition the Olympics was. And I thought this would be a big bump for SmackDown doing a pretty rare title match, much less a title change on television, that you saw a decrease here in the audience. And I think you do have to look at Rhodes and McIntyre as the, if this was success, we, if this was a successful number, you'd certainly be attributing it to the title match.
Yeah, I don't know how to explain that other than to, you know, you build up a big title match and it doesn't really pop a number.
Collision Saturday went against Vengeance Day on Peacock and the UFC 326 card on CBS. So Collision did 370,000 viewers and a 0.05. So it was very, very slightly up in viewership from the week before. That was against Elimination Chamber, but down 17%. Also, its lowest demo number since the Dash study was introduced as well.
Did Nielsen do something to change the methodology again? That is a question, not a statement.
Did the Dash survey dash away after these results? Did we get a new Dash study? Have we looked into this? The Advertising Research Foundation might need to be asked about this. But let's talk about this UFC broadcast. So on CBS, they had a 2-hour window, which was the last hour of the prelims and then the first hour of the main card, airing from 8 till just after 10 p.m. Eastern time. The first hour did just over 2.1 million viewers. The second hour with the main card did over 2.8 million viewers, peaking at 3.2 million. And these male viewership numbers were insane. Males 18 to 49 grew from a 0.66 in the first hour to a 1.08. Males 25 to 54, a 0.91 in hour two, a 1.25 rating in hour two. And adults 18 to 34 basically doubled in the second hour to a 0.74. So among younger audiences, especially males across the board, not just young males, these were incredible numbers, and they've already announced they're going to do this again for UFC 327 on April the 11th. But you know, for all the discontent about the UFC is that they did an $8.3 million gate for this pay-per-view on Saturday, which was not even a big, big marquee show, and their numbers on CBS were outstanding here. So this, to me, would be, this was a big success for the UFC on network, on broadcast television.
It's higher even in total viewership, with the exception of the other sports that were on broadcast here, with World Baseball Classic doing almost 3 million viewers. I mean, in terms of what, there's NBA that it beat out on ABC, the Paralympics on NBC, it was ahead of, and NASCAR on CW. So these seem like decent numbers. Yeah. What does Mark Shapiro say? We own young men.
You know, they're social animals, okay? And the Saturday nights, they want to be creatures of habit, and they want to find
unified platform, more personalization, more customization.
That's what they're doing. And by the way, this doesn't include Paramount Plus. I would imagine a significant portion of
people. It was simulcast.
Yeah. Okay. So you had that going as well. And then coming in just about an hour or two ago was the NXT numbers at 541,000 viewers, which is down 10%, and a 0.08 in the demo, which was down 11% from last week.
The lowest number of the year.
Yes, the lowest number of, this was their lowest audience since, what, December? So
That's what it looks like here, yeah.
So what does this mean, Brandon?
What does this mean for the methodology?
I don't know. This was a rough week for wrestling programming.
Yeah. I mean, this is still probably a lot better than what CW's replacement programming would be for a Tuesday night.
Yeah. What would Stand and Deliver have done on CW itself?
Maybe? A similar number. Like, I don't think these peak events, especially if they're out of time slot, are going to necessarily do what the regular TV show does, but it might do something better than what the replacement would be, what the alternative would be, especially on CW.
All right. Well, there you go, everyone. Those are, that is all of our news for the week. And we want to thank all of you joining us. We hope you are all enjoying us on our new night and time here on Thursday nights. I got to say, this works out a lot better for my schedule. I think I have, the double shows on Wednesdays were getting a little, tough. So Brandon made an executive decision. I think it's worked out so far. I think people are, enjoying the Thursday nights here. And, we include the Takata Monster. Thank you for becoming a YouTube member. Okay. You know, in honor of Nobuhiko.
Yes. I'll have one more Pollock and Thurston here in this particular studio. As of today, I am in an enormous amount of debt.
Oh, congratulations, man. Welcome. You know what? You and David Ellison now have something in common.
Yes,
you're heavily leveraged.
I'm very levered. I don't know what the rate of leverage is that I'm at. But I'm now deeply levered. I've avoided being levered up until now for the most part. But yes, we'll be moving. It'll be like the 21st. We'll actually start to do the final big moves. So
just what it is. I mean, it's an eat what you kill world.
That's what it is, Mark. I know.
Well, congratulations, Brandon, on finalizing your big acquisition. I know.
Yes, you
know,
this is my first home ever. I'm not one of these people. There may not be people in wrestling media who have multiple houses. I'm not one of those. I have one dwelling, one residence.
Yes, I will. Well, it's quite the life change, and one that will come with plenty of stories along the way. So. Congratulations on your big move that will be forthcoming. But the scene might change, but the content won't. So keep tuning in. Thursday nights, 8:30 Eastern here on the WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling platforms. You can catch all of our work at postwrestling.com, including our story about the ESPN grading controversy. And you can leave your grade of that story in the comments section if you're so inclined. And of course, subscribe at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You will get all of Brandon's viewership breakdowns. He has his monthly, my favorite feature, the most matches of the month, including this 54-year-old Winnipeg, Manitoba wrestler for CWE who had, I think, the most matches of
Robbie Royce. You've never Robbie heard of Royce. Robbie Royce?
Yes. You know, a Canadian hero, Robbie Royce, who led the way worldwide. This guy's like 53, 54 years old. I had to look this guy up. So I'm always amazed.
I don't know what it is about the CWE. They run, this is in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and
they run shows just nonstop. It's just like they have to be one of the busiest companies, like outside of Mexico, in the world. It's crazy. It's just it's wild. It's probably like the most undercovered promotion that is out there that do, like, they're just like an old time touring company, and they just go all over the place. And you got guys doing 20 matches a month.
Yeah.
This is wild. This guy's out doing Mystico.
They run, so we don't have events into March here, but we do have, I'm looking to see if there's a date that's missing in February. They did take a week off in February, but like they almost every day they're running throughout. Do you know what these towns are? Morden, Manitoba, they're going all around Canada.
Like, dude, these are like populations, and instead of the number, it's just a mirror.
Portage, La Prairie, Manitoba, Canada, Yorkton, Saskatchewan, Prince Albert, Saskatoon, Lloydminster, Whitecourt, Grand Prairie. Where's the, come on, you're a Canadian wrestling podcast. Where's the coverage for Canada's, what is this, Canadian Elites Wrestling, CWE?
I mean, it's elite.
The prolific wrestling promotions in the world.
No one is keeping up with the touring of Robbie Royce and company. But there you go. If you are a WrestleNomics subscriber, then you're already aware of Robbie Royce.
They ran 130 events in 2025, according to Cage Match. I don't think WWE ran that many events in 2025.
That's amazing. Where is their streaming deal? Okay. You want content? That's the tile for any of these streamers. You can just have daily wrestling from CWE.
You can grade their shows if you want. Letter grade. I bet they won't.
I'm sure that they would welcome letter grades. All right. That is it for us. New edition of Talk went up today on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Myself and Wei Ting chatting just about life post wrestling and running a website in 2026 against and how fast your news can just travel on X before people find your own stories. So all of that and more can be found on that new edition for Cafe subscribers. And that's going to wrap it up. Thank you, folks, as always, and we'll chat with you next Thursday.